Journey to Topaz by Yoshiko Yoshida. Chapter 10. Goodbye, Tanforan. Yuki sat scrunched on the floor, leaning against her cot, piled high now with all the things that had to be packed into her suitcase once more. She hated the mess that each move created. "Isn't it awful?" she wrote to Mimi. "We're being sent to Utah. Everything in camp is closing down, and Ken's taken all the furniture apart to make crates. So here I am writing to you on the floor." It was going to be sad to leave this funny, patched-together city of horse stalls and barracks, and Yuki knew that as much as she had complained about the dark, crowded stall, she was actually going to miss it. After all, it had been home for 4 months, and it was in California. Yuki's thoughts jumped from one thing to another as she tried to straighten out the jumble in her mind and put it down on paper. She looked at the diary she'd been keeping to see what had happened since she last wrote to Mimi. There had been the, page 84, FBI inspection one day, and then the Army inspection for contraband when they'd been confined to their quarters all day. Yuki remembered how Emmy's grandmother had missed the search because she'd gone to the latrines at just the wrong moment, and the soldiers who stood guard around their barracks wouldn't let her back in. "We're being searched and inspected inside out," Yuki wrote as she reached the second page of Mimi's letter. "I wonder what in the world they think we're hiding. Diamonds, maybe? Or guns?" Not even Emmy's grandfather would have a gun in his possession, in spite of all the grumbling he did. "Well, anyway," she went on, "we're being shipped out of Tanforan by mess hall groups, and our turn will be coming pretty soon. Before she go," she added, "please, please find out how Pepper is." It was strange that Andy had never written after his first letter, telling them that Pepper was fine. And this was the third time she'd asked Mimi to check on him, too. It was as though they'd all forgotten that Pepper even existed. At last, Mrs. Jameson, who wrote to her in big strokes that slanted boldly over the paper. "Mimi couldn't bear to write to you, so I promised that I would instead," she began. "My dear sweet Yuki, your beloved Pepper is dead. I believe he died peacefully in his sleep. Don't grieve, my love. Perhaps he has met up with my old parrot, wherever it is that pets go. And who knows, maybe my good captain is looking after them both." Yuki could barely finish reading the letter. She ran out of the stall and headed for the farthest corner of camp, where she was not likely to see anyone she knew. She leaned against the foot of one of the watchtowers, page 85, and let the tears come, sobbing into her wet, grimy palms until she heard voices approaching, and then she ran on. One of the worst things about being in camp was that there was no place to be alone. Wherever she went, people pressed close, in her own stall, at the mess hall, at school, on the track, even in the latrines and washroom. There was nowhere one could go to be all alone. Yuki wished she could climb up into one of the eucalyptus trees and hide inside a cluster of its crescent-shaped leaves. Pepper was gone, and there was nowhere she could go to grieve for him. Yuki slumped to the ground and sat on the sun-dried weeds that grew at the edge of the camp. She turned her back to the barracks and the stables and all the people. She buried her face in her arms and didn't go back to her stall until it was long past time for supper. When it became official that their mess hall group would be leaving for Utah in a few days, Mother got up every morning before 5 o'clock in order to find an empty tub to do her laundry. "Why does everybody have to have clean clothes just to go to Utah?" Yuki asked. But Mother was like everyone else. "I've got to wash while I can," she said urgently. "We may not even have hot water in Utah. Besides, I don't want to pack a lot of dirty sheets and towels." Soon it was their last day in Tanforan, and their last day in California. The small mess halls were now closed, and supper was at 4:30 for the departing contingent at the grandstand mess hall. Yuki's stomach felt just as it did the morning they left Berkeley. Page 86. It just didn't want any food, and that was a strange state for it after feeling deprived so often. Yuki pushed the sweet spare ribs around on her plate, but before she could eat them, it was time to hurry back to their stall. They would pick up their baggage and then report to the laundry barrack, which had been fenced off at the departure area. Beyond it, outside the barbed wire fence, a train had been pulled up to a siding, ready to transport them. The second contingent of 500 people from Tanforan to Topaz, Utah. Jim Harai came to help Ken tie up the rucksack and to help with their other baggage. And Mr. Toda came clutching a bunch of flowers that the camp gardeners were giving away now that the gardens would soon be plowed under. "Well, we'd better get moving," Ken urged. Yuki took one last look around the stall. Now, with all their belongings gone, it looked barren and empty, and she no longer felt very sad about leaving it. The last minute, things that wouldn't fit into their suitcases were squeezed into knitting and shopping bags, and looking like refugees laden with all their worldly possessions, they were finally ready to start for the departure area. "Ready, Emmy?" Yuki called. "I am, but Grandma isn't," Emmy called back. Yuki soon saw why she had taken so long. In each hand, Emmy's grandmother had an enormous bundle wrapped in large squares of cloth and then tied to her back like an extra child with still another bundle. Miss Kurihara was like a squirrel expecting a harsh winter. She had saved scraps of wood, wire, strings, nails, dried grass, leftover crackers, and cookies and dried fruit, and had, page 87, stuffed everything into her bulging bag in spite of Mr. Kurihara's objections. "You wait," she said to Emmy and Yuki, who couldn't help but giggle at the sight of her. "Everything will be useful in Utah, and then you will thank me for being so foresighted." She had even filled her bath barrel with possessions, put a lid on it, and shipped it to Utah. "You're always welcome to borrow it whenever you want a bath," she reminded Yuki and Mother. There was such a crowd at the departure area they could barely say goodbye to Jim and Mr. Toda and their other friends who would be following them to Utah. There was a mad jumble of people, baggage, and crying children, and before Yuki knew what was happening, they were swept inside the fence toward the baggage inspection area. "Oh, no," Ken groaned. "Not another inspection." "Stay together now," Mother said, taking hold of Yuki's hands. "We don't want to get separated." But even as she spoke, Yuki heard Emmy shout, "Where's Grandma?" Yuki turned to look, and sure enough, Mrs. Kurihara, with all her bundles, had suddenly disappeared. Emmy wanted to go look for her, but Mr. Kurihara shook his head. "Stay with me," he said firmly. "Your grandmother is a wanderer, but she'll be back. She will find us." They were divided into numbered groups and told to sit on rows of benches until it was time to board the train. They waited 1 hour, and still Mrs. Kurihara had not returned. Not even Emmy's grandfather seemed a little worried, for they couldn't possibly leave without her. Page 88. Soon a murmur swept through the crowd as a group captain announced they were to file through a double row of armed military police to board the train. "Grandma!" Yuki heard Emmy call out. And there she was at last, carrying still another bundle, her face flushed and wet with perspiration. "Such a big bother," she said, puffing. "All I did was go back for something I'd forgotten under my cot, and then they wouldn't let me back inside the departure area. So I roamed about a bit and found all these nice dried weeds I could use for weaving some sun hats." She looked so pleased with herself that even Mr. Kurihara couldn't be angry with her. "We've been so worried about you, Mother." "We've been so worried about you," Mother said. But Mrs. Kurihara seemed surprised that they had even missed her. "Why, I wouldn't have missed the train," she explained calmly. "I knew it would be at least an hour before they let us on anyway, so I made good use of the time." And as usual, Grandmother Kurihara was right. She stepped briskly toward the MPs and boarded the train as though it had been held until now, especially for her. The train was an old one, with gaslight fixtures and seats, hard enough to have been pews in an old Puritan church. "Wow, wonder where they dug up this relic," Ken said as he hurried to find a good window seat for them. Yuki pressed her nose up against the window and saw the vast crowd of remaining evacuees who had come to see them off for Utah. As she watched, trying to spot some familiar faces, the train whistle blew and all the hands began to wave like a sea of wind-blown grass. Page 89. "Goodbye, goodbye, everybody. Goodbye, Tanforan. Goodbye, California," Yuki called softly. The train gave a lurch and lumbered slowly northward, leaving behind the stables and the barracks and the windswept clusters of eucalyptus trees. Yuki waved until she could no longer see the watchtowers, and then she turned her attention to all of the things she hadn't seen for 4 months. "Look," she cried excitedly, There were houses and gardens and stores and cars and dogs and cats and children with blonde and brown hair playing and riding bicycles. What thrilled her most, however, was the sight of San Francisco Bay and the bridge that spanned it. It was growing dark now, and Yuki could see the string of lights that seemed to float over the water. The bridge was peaceful and magnificent, untouched by the war and its clamor, sparkling across the bay like a golden jewel. As Yuki looked, she was filled with longing for all that was past. She thought of home and the good times they'd had, and of being happy as they drove over the bridge to go to San Francisco. It seemed everyone else was thinking similar thoughts, for the car grew very still as people strained to keep the bridge in sight as long as possible. No one spoke, for there didn't seem to be any words to say what everyone was feeling. Suddenly, the car captain's voice broke the silent web of memories in which they had all been tangled up for a few moments.
"Shades down, everybody," he said. "All shades must be drawn from sundown to sunrise. The lights are going on now. Shades down, please."
He walked up and down the aisles, waiting until each person, page 90, had reluctantly pulled the shade to shut out the world beyond the window. When he had gone by, however, Yuki lifted the edge of her shade and poked her head through the small space she had made, watching the neon signs flash by. As she peered out, she began to feel a growing excitement. "Hey, Ken," she said eagerly, "we're outside the barbed wire. We're in the outside world."
"Yeah, great," he said, but there was no enthusiasm in his voice.
"Utah might be nice," Yuki went on undaunted.
"Not likely," he growled.
"What's wrong?" Yuki asked. Ken had seemed cheerful enough until a few moments ago, but Mother seemed to know what troubled him.
"Ken just needs to be back in the world," she said quietly.
Yuki looked hard at Ken, who was now stretched out on the opposite seat, his knees bent so he could squeeze the length of his body on the short seat. His arms locked beneath his head for a pillow. His eyes were closed, but Yuki knew he wasn't asleep. Maybe he was thinking about what Emmy's grandfather had said that morning, Yuki thought. Mr. Kurihara had said that America was making prisoners of its own citizens, inspecting them, searching them, and herding them like cattle from one camp to another. But she remembered, too, what Mother had said back to him. "Fear has made this country do something she will one day regret, Mr. Kurihara, but we cannot let this terrible mistake poison our hearts. If we do, then we will be the ones to destroy ourselves and our children as well. Don't you see?" Mother had said. "We must make the best of it." Page 91. Mama was right, Yuki thought. Mr. Kurihara was wrong. Still, his words must have sunk into Ken's head and stayed there like a bothersome fly. "Ken?" Yuki called once more. She wanted to tell him to apply for a scholarship and go out to school as soon as they got to Utah. But Ken wouldn't answer. He closed his mind to everything around him, including Yuki. And so the moment passed, and Yuki never said the words that might have given him some comfort.